Welcome to the Chromecast, the official podcast from Chrome Unboxed, where we unpack everything from hardware to software in the world of Chrome and Chrome OS, so that you can be more informed on all the latest updates, changes, and devices. What's up, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Chromecast. My name is Joe Humphrey, and I am joined today by Gabriel Bringers.
Hello.
And Robbie Payne.
Hey, what's up?
So before we get into this podcast, if you haven't listened to our podcast last week, just stop this one and go back and listen to last week, because it's better. It's going to be better than this one. We haven't even done this one yet, and I can already tell you last week's was better.
Well, yeah, you're probably not going to want to listen to this one at all.
Yeah,
I'm just kidding. But no, you need to listen
until we get John on again. One should listen. Yeah.
No, yeah. But seriously, we're probably going to reference some stuff. But it was a great interview, and it was just a cool time to hang out, because it was really awesome to just sit and talk with him for a little bit about Chrome OS and the future and everything else.
It was so really cool. Yeah, we had the opportunity to sit down virtually with John Miletus from the Chrome OS team at Google. And I forget all of his titles, but he is
the
product management,
lead product management, lead over product management, over
engineering,
UX and engineering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, for Chrome OS.
Smart. Yeah. Smart. Very smart gentleman.
Yeah. And he's been apparently on the Chrome OS team now for about a year and a half, I think is what he said. Yeah.
At Google for 12 years.
Yeah. So he's been involved with different stuff. So it's cool to see them move people around. And hopefully that helps them get a little bit more clarity of vision as people come in, because as a segment we're going to talk about later on in the podcast, one of the people that has been brought into a certain segment of the Google, ecosystem, basically to revamp things. I don't even know the guy's name, but they brought in a guy basically to say, hey, look, we need our productivity stuff put under one roof.
Yeah.
Can you fix this?
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, if it delivers on what it looks like,
it's going to be.
Yeah.
It's going to be sick.
It. And it came from someone they brought in to that team and said, hey, we need you to kind of have a clarity of vision and drive this thing forward. And it looks like they've done that. So
it's funny. I mean, I was sitting and thinking about this just yesterday, of kind of thinking about our team and what we do and trying to like take a step back, right? You get caught. I feel like we've just been grinding. Like it's luckily during all of this crazy pandemic, like we've been fortunate enough to keep rolling right along. And there's been some releases. There's been things that we've been working on, and we're putting out our content, and that's what's most important for us. But it's like to try to take a step back and try to look at it from a 5,000 foot view, as people say, is really valuable. And like having just another perspective come in like every now and then. So anywho, I mean, it was a great conversation with John, and it was just a really cool opportunity that we had to talk with him, and fingers crossed, maybe we get to do some stuff like that more in the future. And that's something we've wanted to do with this podcast. I mean, not just with John or with anybody from Google, but some other interview style stuff. So if you're listening to this and you think you would be a candidate for that, send us an email, info@chromeunbox.com.
Yeah, and we get the distinct sense from Google that we're going to be able to do more of this kind of stuff moving forward. So there's interest on both sides, and I think that's a good thing, because there's just some insight that obviously people who work in the midst of this stuff can bring that we may not see. And it's also interesting to talk with these folks and see things from their perspective of what it is that we're doing and what we bring to the table and how we cover this stuff. And so it's just beneficial, I think, on both sides.
Yeah.
And so the more that we can do it, the better it'll be, I think.
Yeah, exactly. It's mutually beneficial, I think. So, go check out that podcast last week, episode 69 with John Miletus. We had a fun conversation. Yeah. So
we'll be here when you're done. We'll be waiting for you right here.
Just pause right now.
All right.
And
see ya.
And we're back. Okay. So, we're going to dig right into, a really interesting article that Robbie wrote this week that I feel like has been coming for a little bit. This idea of, I mean, we've talked about it before on this podcast, even a Pixelbook 2. Is there going to be a Pixelbook 2? And, what could that look like? And when are we going to see one, if we're going to see one? And Robbie wrote a piece and basically said, don't think it's going to happen.
Dashed our dreams.
Yeah, and that wasn't even so much like the point of it for me wasn't that. I mean, we get these things all the time, right? People find Geekbench things. And like, ooh, it says Google Zork, so it's got to be a next pixel book. And so we end up having to write these retort style articles that say, no, in fact, that's not what it is. You know, this... Here's why we know it's not, and blah, 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 and move on.
Which reminds us how narrow this space is, because so many people still look at that and go, oh, it's got to be a Google product. No, it's,
nope,
it's not.
Yeah. And, and that I don't know. For me, it's here lately, we've had quite a few hardware releases. And so, wow.
What in the world is that?
I don't know what that was.
Robbie's getting some on ads.
I think I clicked on it by accident. Sorry. I was kind of scrolling around here. Anyway, you know, the point of the article really was to, I don't know, just express a little bit about what we all, you know, as a team think about Google hardware, especially in the Chrome OS space, and what we actually think is reality. And so, you know, after talking with John last week, you know, it I don't know, talking with someone at Google just brings up all that stuff. You know, you start thinking about, well, I wonder what, like, he obviously didn't tell us anything, but...
Yeah,
you know,
but when you see how passionate they are about the operating system and the platform, you think,
oh, man.
Okay, great. Why aren't you guys doing this? You know, and I get some degree of it. I get some of the stuff that if you listen to last week's episode... Well, no, we didn't even talk about that, did we? Well, anyway, if you just listen to just... read what Robbie had written, it's frustrating because you really want to have that device.
Right.
But it's just, I don't think Google sees the benefit in it anymore.
I don't think they do either. And that sucks to say.
Yeah.
I mean, it just sucks to have to say that out loud and be like, yeah, that's probably true. But, you know, one thing we I can't remember if it was when we were talking with him on the podcast. We chatted with him a little bit afterwards. And again, he didn't share anything with us. We can't tell you. But, you know, we got the distinct impression, and I shared this in the article, that, you know, Google partners with everybody when they make Chromebooks. So I don't think that's a thing people know or that they're aware of completely, that in the end, you know, every Chromebook you mess with, it's some way, shape, or form, not just from a perspective of, hey, Google had to check off and say, yes, this, you can make this a Chromebook, but Google partners with these OEMs, you know,
right,
and they work with them to develop Chromebooks.
Yeah, like because
the Samsung Galaxy Chromebook didn't show up because Samsung went and built a Chromebook.
Right,
because,
like,
hey, is this cool?
Yeah, with Windows devices, it's a lot less hands-on. They have hardware specifications that they have to meet. Windows has a specific scheduler that runs that verifies that the hardware is compliant with Windows, and then the OEMs pay for the license to have it installed on the device.
Right.
There's not a lot of hand-in-hand action. Not that Microsoft doesn't do that, but it's not hand-in-hand, hey, let's design this thing together. Let's build this together. It's not like that at all.
Well, and that's why you see so many laptops, like Microsoft Windows laptops, come out, and they have custom drivers for how they got their keyboard laid out. They have custom drivers for how to make their mouse work. And they have custom drivers for all this stuff because, yeah, Windows is flexible that way, but that's a part of Windows I hate. I personally absolutely hate the idea of buying a Windows device and knowing that my experience is reliant on that manufacturer's driver updates to make sure that it still works when Windows updates. Like, I hate it. It's one of the things that most made me run away from Windows. Like, I don't like that. I want this integrated feel that when my Chromebook updates, the new features that come with it just work with it.
Right.
Like, I don't have to worry about, like, oh crap, did HP update the drivers? Is that going to work here? Is that going to, you know, like that? I haven't thought about that in years.
Yeah.
And I remember that feeling of just, like, oh, well, Asus didn't update this, or this trackpad isn't, you know, precision touchpad compatible. It's Asus's ELAN, blah, blah, blah. And so I'm on these, like, shady-looking sites trying to find new drivers.
Right, and that's because, the cool thing about Chrome OS is that these manufacturers, when they work so closely with Google, and Google signs off on this, those manufacturers are on the hook to say, hey, as long as this thing's getting updates from Google,
we're behind it.
We are behind making sure the hardware that's on there works.
Right. And so they do a lot of work to make sure. And it's a simplified version of what it means to make a laptop, sure. But at this point, the simplified version that just works all the time, to me, is way more beneficial than something that I have a lot more control over that may or may not work unless I do hours of research to make sure this works and take hours of updates. And like, ugh, you know, nobody, most people just don't want to deal with that junk anymore. Yeah. And it's part of the appeal of Chromebooks. And so since people don't realize that that's the case, it can come off as if, you know, Asus went to Asus's corner and they checked with Google and said, hey, can we license this Flip 436? And Google said, yeah, go ahead. And they went and made their Chromebook and then went to market with it. And that's just not how that works at all. Like, there are people at Google that are closely working with these companies. Again, the Samsung Galaxy Chromebook, we even said this, like, it feels a little bit like a spiritual successor to the original Pixelbook, mm-hmm. the squared edges, the polished design. But this week, and I think this is what honestly brought all of this bubbling to the surface for me, was Dieter over at The Verge put a tweet out, and he said, all I want is the exact Pixelbook I have right now with updated internals and smaller bezels. Like, that's all I want. And then he subtweeted under that his review of the Pixelbook from 2017, and he said, this is top five best laptops ever made.
Yeah.
And Google treated it like a one-off. Mm-hmm. And I read those tweets, and I read some of the people responding to those tweets.
And Robbie sat and cried in the corner.
Yeah, I mean, I legitimately thought something was wrong with him. And he's like, no, I'm just writing this article. I was like, oh, okay, because I thought, like, your wife called.
Like,
and
yeah, it was like, you know,
the
house
burned down or something.
When someone's upset, and they're just like...
Well, hey, do you need to talk, buddy? You okay?
And that's the thing, like, Dieter's tweets started me on this, like,
oh, it was process. When I read that,
I started writing. Yeah. Like, this is the way I write. I write, and I don't know, it's hard to explain. Like, that's why I write mostly things in there. Even if a little news thing is usually pretty narrative for me. Yeah. Yeah. It's just the way that I process stuff. And so as I was processing through, I mean, it ended up being a long article and really going through all the reasons why we love Google-made Chromebooks. It was weird. Like, halfway through the article, there was like part of me that was like, yeah.
Getting excited.
What about this? And ooh, it'd be neat if, and oh, what, maybe if they just took this and oh, by the way, this would work. And then, oh, but yeah, we're pretty sure that's not going to happen. And again, right. We don't have insider information here. It's not like we know what's going on. We just know that we've always been able to find some breadcrumbs that point us to going, maybe, you know, maybe here's this. And I need to say, and I didn't say this in the article, that the things that we used to be able to lean on, they were thin as far as finding Google hardware.
Yeah, it was a lot of gut.
Like, removing the SD card support. There are only a couple Chromebooks out there that aren't Google-made Chromebooks that ditch the SD card. I can't find any right now, any current ones that we're tracking where they've turned off SD card support. So that's one thing. Google doesn't seem to like to put SD card, but they could. So that's pretty thin. And then stuff like the assistant button. Mm-hmm. That was another trackable thing. It's like, oh, well, they're adding the assistant button. Nobody's put an assistant button on a Chromebook except Google. It's like, oh, if we find that, A, we haven't found that, but there's that new Vivaldi keyboard layout thing that basically is this whole other set of software stuff that's there so that, you know, people can write their own custom keyboards. So, right. So for some of these enterprise devices that do double duty as
with
a
parallels
Windows.
And stuff like that. Absolutely.
Yeah. So now that's kind of convoluted all of that. So technically they could use Vivaldi and write their own little keyboard layout and you wouldn't really know it.
Right.
Like, it'd be very
and
hard
that,
to find.
And that also is another thing that kind of lends to our theory that Google doesn't have anything on the roadmap right now, because up until now, Google has locked down that assistant key to their devices and then third-party keyboards, but no Chromebooks have it. If Google has said, hey, for right now, guys, we're just not pursuing that, I could totally see them saying, all right, manufacturers, you can use the assistant key now because we're not making a Chromebook.
Right, and I don't have any proof that anyone's using
either
the assistant
way,
key or not, like, because it's very hard. It's much harder to see what's going on with these Vivaldi keyboards and their layouts and stuff like that. So those are really the only two things we had to go on. Like, we could track Atlas, which is the Pixelbook Go, because it showed up the same time and shared a baseboard with Nocturne, which was the Pixel Slate. Like, they literally had the same board inside them. So we already had a jumping off point for that one. Nocturne leaked in all sorts of little videos and developer stuff. It had leaked prior to that, and then there were some pretty clear indicators with an assistant key, removal of the SD card. Like, those things were there. The original Pixelbook, I think that was all just gut feeling.
That's
they were
exactly
making
what it was.
I don't remember what it was about the Eve baseboard that originally made you think.
Something to do, I think, with Mr. Lorre. I think was a couple of emails that we knew for a fact were Google engineers, but they're also guys that work on other devices too. But there were just certain threads that overlapped, and then this guy was on this commit, and then they were talking about that, and it was mostly gut, honestly.
Until I remember Droid Life had and ended up seeing those ads before that event, and we were like, "Oh my god, that's a thing!"
We were sitting in there at the mm-hmm. big table found it.
Oh my god, and it's going to be called the Pixelbook, and it's going to be expensive, and it's going to have all this interior space, and so I vividly remember all of those things. And again, there are no clear markers that say, "Oh, here's how you know it's Google." Like, it's always just been this kind of like, we kind of think. But in our interview time last week, they were pretty clear. John was pretty clear about the fact that, they're very proud of what they've done with working with other manufacturers. And you get the sense, you just kind of get the feeling that, Google has used what they needed to do, like with the Pixelbook and the Slate and the Pixelbook Go. It's like, look, guys, here's how you can do it. Here's how you can do it and make it really nice. And, okay, we've accomplished our goal.
Right.
Which I guess is okay.
But the Pixelbook was just so good.
Yeah. And maybe it is just fanboying, but at the same time, like, you don't want to look at a company and say, hey, we want you all to make this thing, even if you're not going to make money off of it, just because we want this thing. I mean, that's honestly, at the end of the day, that's what we're saying. But still, Samsung made a $1,000 Chromebook that has everything you could ever want in a laptop, Windows or otherwise, and it's $1,000. Yeah, that seems a little bit pricey, but for what you're getting, it's a lot of device.
Google put a 16x10 screen in.
Yeah, but Google could pare that down. You don't need an i5 and 16 gigs of RAM. Just do an i3, fanned or unfanned, either one, do an M3. 8 gigs of RAM, like the Pixelbook, like the mid-range Pixelbook Go, or even the base Pixelbook Go. Mm-hmm. That's what you have, right? You have the base.
I had.
He's had like 12 of them. But yeah, the base Pixelbook Go is what, $650?
$650,
yep. Yeah. So you're still getting plenty of internals for 90% of users, and then focus on that design and give us a Pixelbook 2 convertible that has those type of internals, but that made by Google design,
aesthetic, something. Yeah. Feel,
and make it $699. And after all of these new devices that have come out, if you make a made by Google convertible that's $700, no one's going to bat an eye and be like, "Oh my gosh, that's so expensive."
Yeah, and I know Google wants to be careful too. Like, Microsoft runs into this with first party hardware. You don't want to make your manufacturers upset,
cannibalize the
and
market.
So I think they've always shot for the high end because of that. Like, it keeps them away from the competition. They can set the bar, and they don't have to sell a bunch of Chromebooks. And I'm like, cool. Don't get ultra competitive with it. Build another $1,000 Chromebook that. It may take the market a little bit of time to realize how much they love it, but the Pixelbook still, like, it took almost a year for people to get on board and go, "Oh, I this is awesome. I love this thing," and now we look at it and it's, coming up on 3 years old, and people still consider buying it. We get emails like, "Should I buy the Pixelbook or should I buy this?" And it's like, because of AUE and how much faster processors are now, it's hard to recommend the Pixelbook. And yet there's still something in me that's like, I don't know, maybe you would be happier with the Pixelbook.
Yeah, because honestly,
it's just something about it's like they just nailed so many things. And that's the painful part, is that they wouldn't have to change that much to deliver a very good, one of the best Chromebook experiences.
Take the same keyframe that's in the Pixelbook Go.
Don't even change the key. The keyframe on the original Pixelbook
totally.
Is great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all been iterative since then anyway. Yeah.
Update the internals, ditch palm the rest. Silicon keyboard or palm rest.
Get rid of those.
Maybe do 16x10. I don't know. I mean,
I did some measurements. The screen from this Acer 713 would fit perfectly into the Pixelbook's frame.
There you go.
Without changing anything. It would just minimize the bezels, obviously.
Yeah. Put
take
this
that
panel
exact,
on it, which
exact
is
panel.
Plenty bright.
Then this panel's I love, I'm looking at the Chromebook 713. Our review will drop this weekend of it, but I can go ahead and tell you, like, this is my favorite display of any Chromebook.
Right, but fingerprint sensor, and then
for the sake
of just saying, hey, we support this, make it USI compatible, because Google is one of the big names. So that would, because honestly, USI technology, they need the push, they need the boost, they need.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a big.
And then just put their own silicon in it.
Yeah, and that way, we'll get to that in a second. But, you know, don't make a $99 pin. Just make it USI compatible. And if you have your own, great. If not, just say, hey, you can get one of these USI stylus from one of our partners.
But, yeah, they could barely iterate on the entire frame, which I know took them considerable amount of time to develop. Like, it is, I still love that hardware probably better than any Chromebook I've ever used. The bezels are big. So again, we're talking about the screen, change that out. The palm rest, you know, make those glass or just aluminum or whatever. Yeah,
magnesium alloy crap or
something, whatever. Or just leave it the aluminum that the rest of the thing is and bring it up a little bit. Whatever you got to do. And then that's it, right? I'm a fingerprint scanner, you know. But as we've seen, not even every one of the Chromebooks that are available have to have that either.
Nope.
And so you don't have to go, like, rework a bunch of stuff. I'm sure the board could be fit in the same space the boards fit in now, just with updated internals. And that's it. Like, the Pixelbook didn't have great speakers. So what? Leave those speakers in. It's fine. They were workable. They were fine. You don't need to reinvent that. You don't even need to change the trackpad at all. The trackpad was a little small compared to some of these, but it was completely fine. Like, I never once thought, ugh, the trackpad on this is so terrible. Like, never. So, trackpad's fine. Keyboard's fine. The build of the thing is amazing. The hinge was awesome. The way it flipped around and how it felt when it was converted is awesome. Minimize your bezels with just a different screen. Done. You know, and I don't know. And the fact that I know that's not...
He's getting excited again.
Yeah. Right. Like, no, he's getting frustrated.
This is exactly what happened when I was writing the article. Like, I'm sitting there like, oh, that's it. That's all they'd have to do. This is easy. And you know what other company does this? Two companies do this. Exact same thing. Apple does it. I mean, it's hard to tell one MacBook from another. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll have one big refresh maybe every 5 years or something. Yeah. But they just iterate. They just change things. And it doesn't mean they don't screw stuff up in those iterations. The keyboard on this Mac that we have sitting right here.
Hot garbage.
Was a mistake, and they backpedaled and fixed it and changed it and moved forward. Those are iterations. Those are the way you make products recognizable. It's the way you continue delivering, and people will keep buying them because people would buy an updated Pixelbook in a heartbeat.
Right.
Like, they wouldn't even have to think about it this time. You could sell it aggressively this time around. And I know the Pixel Slate was a misstep. I think the Pixelbook Go got them back to form.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I would be pretty happy with an updated Pixelbook Go. Like, if they just did a Pixelbook Go 2020, you know, just update the internals on that thing. I would love for them to put a 16x10 screen.
Keep the speakers though.
Yeah. God, keep those speakers, keep the keyboard, keep the trackpad, keep the build quality. Cause I said it just this morning, I was testing something in the developer channel and I have a Pixelbook Go and dev. And so I just went ahead and wrote the article on it and just looked over at Gabe. I was like, there's just something about this thing, man. It's their attention to detail, and regardless of Google's missteps in the past with hardware, they have a knack for building great pieces of hardware. I saw another tweet in that line of, like, I guess Dieter was in the same mindset this week with Google hardware, and he retweeted somebody that said, I sure wish Google loved their hardware as much as I do.
Yeah.
And it's true.
Well, like, here's what's crazy.
It's almost like they don't they make it, and they're just like, okay, moving on. Like, I don't care about it that much, and you don't realize how good your stuff is.
Yeah, and you see it, though, and I understand there's a lot of value to Google in AI and the Google Assistant and Connected Home. There's a lot of value there that helps generate the money machine for them. But you see that detail and those iterations in the Nest line right now. How long ago did Google acquire Nest?
3 years.
3 years.
Two, okay. Three.
And I know Google Home existed before that, but honestly, Google Home isn't a thing anymore. It's just not. Those products are antiquated. They look aged, whatever. The Nest line, you can walk into a Best Buy or wherever, and you see a Nest product, you know it's a Nest product. The colors, the design, the fabric, all that stuff, there's no reason. I know it's not going to be as big as the Nest line because of the connected home and all and the assistant, but I think Google's they're missing the value that they could have with a Pixelbook line.
Agreed.
Yeah. Even if it was every 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, sure. Honestly.
Yeah. And that's, I stumbled on that too. I was like, oh, wait, you know, with the Pixel, the Chromebook Pixels, the original namesake of this whole Pixel stuff.
You're welcome.
You know, those were, they made one in 2013 and 2015. I was like, oh, maybe it's a two. Oh, wait, no, it's been 3 years. Forget it. So, you know, I could see them going 2 years for the Pixelbook Go.
Or do, sure. Yeah, do a TikTok. Do a convertible this year, clamshell this year, whatever.
Yeah, you know? And I mean, I don't know. And perhaps we're going to talk about silicon here in a few minutes. Maybe they are planning on it, but they're not going to do it until they can use their own silicon.
And maybe not.
And they're just not interested in messing with Intel or AMD or MediaTek or Snapdragon or any of those things. And they're just like, hey, the market's in a mature place, and we're going to wait until we can deliver what we're wanting to deliver. And if that's the case, I understand that. I get that. I do think they should iterate the Pixelbook Go. They should at least put out just a, here's a 2020 Pixelbook Go. It could literally be the exact same thing. Just, you know, give us 10th gen stuff with
or maybe
new Bluetooth, new Wi-Fi, and maybe a fingerprint.
And maybe, I doubt it, but maybe they have actually duped us all. And
they could have completely.
And when the Qualcomm actually drops, it will be a made by Google device. That'd be awesome, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Nah, maybe. I mean, I don't know, because that's
maybe
those ARM devices are going to be connected, and you know, is the MediaTek, is Oscarata 5G compatible?
Yes.
So that chip
was
in it,
their first. Yeah.
You know, so there could be some, you know, that always connected PC kind of thing. Yeah. Like, obviously, all of that language, verbiage, feel fits into the Chrome OS world, and no one's doing it yet. So if Google's whole thing with the Pixel Books and Pixel Slates and, you know, their first party hardware is always to just push into a new thing to show everybody else how to do it.
That could be
there's a place to go. That's where it needs to go. And it may not be about having the most powerful Chromebook, because it's like, cool, people are making powerful Chromebooks. I mean, I'm looking at the 713 sitting in front of me. That's $600 for just an absolute monster of a Chromebook. But it didn't feel like a Google-made Chromebook, you know.
Not at all.
You know, and it's no knock to Acer. Like,
no,
this is a great machine
to
work
device,
on. I've loved working on this thing. I really like it. And every time I open it and I see this screen, I'm like, yeah, this is why you're staying around. But at the same time, it doesn't feel like a Google-made product. And so, like, the closest thing to a Google-made product we've had this year is clearly the Duet. And from what we can tell, Lenovo and Google worked really closely on that thing. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like Lenovo had this grand idea all by themselves. They really wanted to push into this thing. And so, you know, I'm all for Google partnering with people and making, you know, Chromebooks that are awesome and Chrome OS devices that are awesome, and without having the need to pat themselves on the back for it.
Right.
Like, they don't have to be like, hey, we helped. You know, they're cool with the ecosystem doing what it's doing. I am 100% behind that. I just think, just like with Microsoft and their Surface line of products, it can continue to be done. I mean, we're on a Surface Pro 6 now.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
sure.
We're 6 years into Microsoft making Surface stuff. It's not like their competitors and their manufacturers have been like, you know what? Fine. I'm not making laptops anymore. They're all making laptops.
No.
You know what? They're all making better laptops.
Yeah, they're aiming. I mean, you've got, what is that one company that makes the clone? Is it Chewy?
Evo.
Oh, it's Evo, but I think Chewy has one too. That's one. Like a.
And people are trying to clone it, which is good. Like, if you make something for people to shoot at, a lot of times that's a great thing for your market, and
raises the bar for everyone.
The images of this new Lenovo Yoga Thin or. Slim or something
Slim
like that.
5G carbon. X carbon. Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's the Slim. Yeah.
Gorgeous. It's just gorgeous looking. And like, you have the Dell XPS lines. Like, those things don't exist, I don't think, without Microsoft setting the bar with the Surface line. Do they sell them? Sure. I don't think Microsoft makes a ton of money on hardware. I mean, we never see anything about that. They don't need to. Google's in the exact same position. They're a little more involved with their partners. But that would also be the equivalent of saying they should stop making the Pixel phones.
Right.
Because other people make Android phones, so they should stop doing that.
No, yeah, I think that's the thing. They're not going to make a ton of money, if any money, whatever. But I think them continuing to commit to making at least every other year a made by Google this is the premier device. It expands the Chrome OS ecosystem completely for OEMs. More manufacturers sell Chromebooks, and the operating system becomes bigger, and more people know about it. It becomes a consumer staple, and everyone wins, including Google.
See, this conversation is bringing me hope, because I'm like, all of these points are so valid. It's hard for me to believe a situation where Google's going, yeah, that's all true, but we're still not going to. Like, they're seeing massive growth. I mean, massive growth in the Chrome OS segment. So this is a growth spot where they need to lean into, not back away from. Like, we have no idea what we've talked about a couple weeks ago on their phones. Nobody knows what the heck they're doing with their phones. Like, we just are all just kind of not really sure. But you know what? They haven't seen growth in the phone space. If anything, right now, they're super threatened probably by iOS 14.
Yeah.
I mean, in the iPhone SE, that's $400. Like, Apple is kind of eating Google and Android's
in
lunch
the US,
right
yeah.
now in the U.S. Yeah, we get outside the U.S., totally different story. But in the U.S. anyway, it feels very much like, oh my God, you know, like Apple is just smashing it here. Like, I don't know how they're going to rebound from that. And again, talking about silicon, which I think is what we need to talk about next.
Yeah.
Some of those answers, I think, come. I think we're in a very weird transitioning period right now, and it part of those moves could have an impact there.
Yeah, exactly. So let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk about that. This podcast is brought to you by NordVPN. We recommend the service, and we use NordVPN because they keep your browsing secure and private on any device. Whether you're using a Chromebook, an Android device, a Mac, an iPhone, or a Windows device, NordVPN is going to protect your browsing. They also have 24/7 customer support in case you ever have any issues, and they offer a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to learn more and maybe give it a try, head over to chromeunboxed.com/Nord, N-O-R-D. Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. We have our Jimmy John's order placed.
It is in. Guarantee we will be interrupted by a phone call or something.
They cannot find our office for some reason, even though we order every Friday.
We're in the upstairs of literally the oldest building in the county.
Just
it's well, not well, like we just built it.
Well, here's the funny part too, is that like people are like, I can't find the chamber. We're upstairs. The downstairs in the place we rent is the Chamber of Commerce for this entire county.
It's been here a little while.
And it says Hardin Chamber on the side of the building in massive font.
Big
down
letters.
Almost impossible to miss.
Yeah.
Nearly impossible.
Yeah.
And yet, every week.
No one.
Oh, so where is this place? Oh, my gosh. And we looked it up last week because it was so bad. We looked it up on Google Maps.
Maybe it's wrong.
Let's put the address. We can say our address. It's on our website. Yeah. 111 West Dixie Avenue, Elizabethtown, Kentucky. So we Google mapped it. And it literally, like, the dot
is the front
it's like
door.
In our office. It's like right where we're sitting right now. It's right here. It's not unclear in any way, shape, or form. Like, I don't get it. Like, I get it's downtown, so it's not the easiest place to find parking. Totally get that.
Right, because I do know a lot of people that don't know that there is municipal parking behind our office.
Totally get that.
But if you were going somewhere on the square, it's not hard to find a parking spot.
Park wherever you got to park. Just park your car somewhere and get out and walk.
Park.
And still hold the phone and then walk to where the dot is and put your dot on that dot. And I'd say you'll be in the vicinity where you'll
you'd
see.
You'd probably be sitting at Robbie's desk.
You would see the massive Hardin Chamber up on the wall.
Robbie, it's not that simple.
I know.
Let's talk about.
I'm oversimplifying.
Let's talk about silicon.
We're getting hungry.
Not silicone.
Silicon.
Let's not talk about silicone.
Silicon.
Silicon.
The metal.
Yeah. It's on the periodic table.
Yeah. So we hinted at this a little bit before we took our break for an ad there. But how cool would it be if, you know, Google started making their own silicon for phones and then maybe made one for, you know, a Pixel book? That would be interesting. Someone else is doing that, you know, a big company.
Yeah, doing that, something kind of in that vein.
You know, Apple.
So I think the conversation has to start with what Apple's doing, and people have, I mean, we've had the conversation for gosh, probably years, ever since like the Bionic chip started coming out. And probably the conversation really accelerated once the first iPad Pro shipped. I think people started thinking like,
whoa, this thing's powerful.
These are really powerful. And then this last iteration, I think the A13X or whatever the latest chip is in the latest iPad Pro, where people are like running these 4K, multiple 4K video editing.
This could technically render a video faster than my MacBook.
That's weird. And so obviously it's caused people to be like, well, I want to use this chip but run Mac OS stuff, or I want to use this chip and make this my computer, my one and only thing, because it's got all the power. Clearly, that's not Apple's thing. Apple wants to...
They want you to buy all the things.
Right. They want you to have a Mac and an iPad and a phone.
Yeah.
They've been pretty clear about that. Right. They've been pretty clear
about
that.
And glasses.
And I'm going to remember to do this. I'm going to write a note for it right now. I'm going to put it in the show notes. There is a video by Mr. Who's the Boss.
Yeah.
If you've not checked him out. He did a video just last week, I think. He's a great YouTuber. He's one of my favorites. Very, very calming to listen to with his accent.
Is he British or like...
Yeah, he's British.
Okay.
And anyway, so he did a video. He just called Apple's Master Plan. And he lays out all of this stuff about like the way that Apple goes about doing things from a viewpoint of simplicity. And he's right. I mean, it's kind of mind-boggling, some of the things you look at, some of the things he points out, and it's like, oh yeah, I didn't even think about that.
The pencil was interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that.
The new one is like more like a real pencil, where it's got like sides, like an octagon or a hexagon. Or
I haven't even seen that.
The one that magnets up on top of the iPad Pro, it's got flat sides. Even an issue there. But the original Apple Pencil was round. And like he points out, they spent time to weight it in such a way that if you set it on a table, it will always roll itself and stop at a point where the inscription of pencil, Apple Pencil at the top, rolls upward.
And did so and made it that way and didn't get on stage and talk about the design and the details and all of the nerdy stuff about how they made that happen.
He made that point with, like he said, the current iPhones right now, when you record, they record 4K video in 60 frames a second. He's like, most users know that, and that's what they need to know. He's like, what they didn't tell anyone from stage or have never talked about it at all is the fact that actually it records 4K 120 frames per second with every other frame
exposure.
Being a low exposure, so that it can automatically blend those together and not overexpose.
HDR constantly. Type stuff, yeah.
But they've never gone on stage and said that. They never patted themselves on the back.
Because it's too complicated. People don't understand it.
Too much. You know, here's what you need to know. Best looking video, 4K 60. See ya. You know, there's something to be said for that. Like, it's kind of brilliant, some of the things that they've done, the steps that they've taken. Well, part of that video obviously gets into this idea of what Apple is doing now with, you know, Macs. I mean, they kind of finally came out and announced what we all felt like was coming eventually with, you know, their A-series chips, ARM-based chips, running in Macs. And that they actually... No, they didn't actually, because I watched the whole thing because I was really interested to see how they were going to spin this. Because before watching that Mr. Who's the Boss video, you know, I still inherently knew, like, Apple doesn't like to share a ton of stuff, like, when they don't have to. They just, here's what it is, and this is what we're doing. I don't think they went into depth on saying that this is ARM versus x86.
No, Intel, not at all.
They didn't say any of those things. They're just like, we're building this, and here's the benefits. And that's Mr. Who's the Boss also pointed that out. He's like, Apple doesn't talk about specs. They talk about
the benefit to the user. Yeah.
Right. So it's not about, we have 5 gigs of storage in that first iPod. It was
five times more storage.
Right.
Yeah.
this processor is this much faster than our last one.
Right.
It's not about, here's benchmarks and here's, and it's got teraflops and because
so many tech companies get caught up in that stuff,
and most consumers look at that and their eyes glaze over and they don't know what you're talking about because they didn't have all the research done prior to this conversation, and they're just like, what are you even talking about? Like, and for most people, you know, when you say, oh, the new Macs are going to run on ARM chips,
what?
They don't know what that
what
means.
What is ARM? Nope.
I've had that conversation 100 times with people, and I immediately go, oh, you don't know what that is. No, I don't know what that is. Okay, well, ARM chips are the type of chips that are in your phones and tablets. And then x86, what Intel and AMD make, are usually in computers. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those usually have fans, and, you know, they're in bigger things, and they are more powerful, but, you know, they require tons of power draw, and ARM
resources.
And, you know, the gap is getting narrower and narrower. Anywho, so Apple did, I think, a good job of coming out and saying that. Like, hey, we're just going to build our own silicon, and let's spend time talking about how that benefits you. Hey, you're going to be able to put iOS apps and iPadOS apps onto your Mac now. They'll work with very little effort. And because of, you know, they likened it more to when they went from PowerPC, I think, was the... I don't remember what those... It was a different type of processor. They weren't always Intel.
Right.
So they, when they made that transition, that's all they talked about. It's like, we're going to a different type of processor, you know. So here's all our tools, because they talked a lot about that. Here are the tools that, you know, we can run it through an emulation. And even at emulation, like, what they're running is pretty darn impressive. Yeah. I mean, and that's completely emulated 3D software and stuff. You know, so, hey, we have tools for you to emulate, but it's Apple. I guarantee you, for the developers on the other end of it, they're probably pushing on their throats and being like, look, fix it.
Make it
or
work.
It won't be on Mac OS, and you won't be on iPad anymore. And Apple wields
and
the ability
everyone
to...
everyone will have to do it.
They'll do it. You know, so they're all probably scrambling, and they're all probably not nearly as excited about it as everybody else is right now, because they're the ones under
time
the gun.
And development.
But all of that to say, Apple has announced this, and it's a big shift, and it's going to be a massive shift in a direction for Apple. I think it's going to be hugely profitable for them. Assuming that these devices deliver. Now, that's the part we have to wait and see. Like, we have to wait and see these people that rely on MacBooks for... Oh, man, there's some things, like, I think we push this Mac pretty hard. There are people that do stuff that would completely cripple this MacBook.
Melt it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, what about those people?
Yeah.
You know, is there still going to be an Intel version for those people? Or it doesn't feel like it. It feels like they're going all in on this. And I'm like... Are your A series chips really up to this?
Yeah, that's,
like, I don't know. I don't know.
And I, you have to believe that Apple has considered all of that. But
I
you're right.
So.
It's not just like a tiny crop of outliers. There's a large portion of Mac users who push their devices, and what's the most Macked out Mac you can get. I mean,
Macked out Mac.
You like that? Macked out. 90s coming back. I mean, what is
like
it?
Price wise or
just
or,
spec wise?
Oh, okay. Gosh. I mean, they do
push
crazy
the,
stuff.
Well, I mean, you got to think though, they're just doing this for MacBook.
Yeah.
So that could be
the Mac Pro is.
I think
maybe they're drawing a line in the sand between the two.
Right. They're all in ones, and but still that feels fragmented to me for Apple. Like.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's going to be an interesting development to watch happen, because we can kind of watch it from the sidelines. You know, we're not that heavily invested in Apple stuff, so we can kind of wait and see what they do. But the fact that they have kind of made this jump and made this push, I think is going to only accelerate Google's move into the same type of space.
Because what it does, and Mr. Beast spoke about this, and I think
not
we've
Mr.
made...
Beast. Mr.
Oh,
who's the
God,
boss?
Mr. Beast.
I was watching some
Mr.
Beast.
Just
Mr.
some
Beast
Mr.
Stuff.
YouTube channel.
Mr. Robot?
Mr. Somebody. Mr. Who's the Boss. Talked about this a little bit. I think we've maybe mentioned it on here before. These computers, these devices that get built on Intel, they are at the mercy of Intel developing chips.
100%.
And so they're like, okay, well, you know, I'm sure they are privy to more information than the consumers are, so they know what's coming and they're building for that next generation chip or whatever, but they're building their devices to match that chip that Intel says it's going to do this, this, and this, and you all build your stuff to make it work with our chip.
Right.
Whereas Google could, you know, or Apple is doing this with their own silicon. They're cutting out that middleman. And oh, by the way, now they don't have to pay that middleman a cut every single time
a
device is sold.
It's not just as simple as saying, oh, well, this is just so Apple can make more money. That's not... I think that's tertiary to the conversation.
That's probably not even a driving force behind a lot of this.
No.
I think it's more so that they are freeing themselves up to build devices that they can set the parameters for.
Right.
You know, they can say, we want it to do this, this, and this, and we can build that into the silicon to do exactly
that.
Yeah,
so now you have a situation where Apple's software team can go, hey, for Mac OS,
we need it to do
whatever
this
next
thing,
we really want this feature, but we don't have a way to drive it from hardware. Mm-hmm. So they talk to the chip team and say, hey, what it would look like to have a core of that chip doing
this thing
so that we could, and they go, cool, here's how it works. And they start working on that.
Right.
year and a half, 2 years out, obviously, but you know, that gives them that ability rather than being that passive, like you were saying, of sitting back and going, okay, Intel, what do you have for
what
us?
Got
right,
for
because
us?
And
what can we do?
Even as freely as they work in open source with Chromium OS, Google doing this would be a huge move, because anytime there's a new processor, even though Intel, obviously, x86 and all that is at the heart of Chrome OS, we have ARM and all that, but when a new chipset comes along, you know, Jasper Lake, whatever, all of that stuff has to come from Intel, and Intel's working side by side with the Chromium developers to get all this stuff in place, and we've got right. to fix this and these dependencies and all that and this mm-hmm. and whatever. If it's coming from in-house, all of that gets a lot smoother.
Right.
It kind of changes the way they could develop the operating system in general.
Well, what happened to the OP1 and all that stuff?
Well, that's a good point, I think, to think about with what Google could do with this. I think what they kind of wanted to sort of do with the whole OP1 thing was create a chipset line that it wouldn't have been the same thing, but it at least would have been, hey, we're going to work closer with these ARM manufacturers to customize some cores. We're going to work with somebody that's already doing it. Well, they chose Rockchip, and Rockchip is what they are, you know. Like MediaTek, for instance, is really on the rise. Like they are yes. starting to roll out some
really
competitive
things. Yeah, because when OP1 first launched, MediaTek was a little bit behind the curve.
They were.
Their focus was still on mobile devices, and it still is, but that they
on cheap mobile devices, though, too.
They have, since like two CESs ago, they yeah. have exploded, and yeah. they're hitting the 5G market, the always connected, the powerful devices. They're catching yeah. up. They're nowhere near the size of Qualcomm, but as far as on a technology level, they're coming to parity with them.
Well, and that's where all these moving pieces start coming into place, I think, for Google. So at this point right now, I mean, it's been, I just pulled this article up.
April.
When was this written? Yeah. So in April, news leaked from somewhere. I don't know who had the source material there. I know it was on The Verge and stuff, and we covered it, obviously. But it was, hey, it's leaked that Google is working on custom chipsets for Chromebooks and Pixel phones. And it's a lot of people, myself included, believe that that's why the Pixel phones are a little bit of a mess this year. So take mixed pandemic in with, hey, we're trying to get our silicon stuff lined up in with, we're not sure what to do with the phones to make money. You know, like all of these things, I think, have all kind of collided in the space. And that's why the Pixel phone strategy is a bit of a mess this year. I think as long as they get a good medium range phone out this year, they'll be fine. Like
right.
that's all they need to do. I don't know how they're going to position it or blah, blah, blah. But whatever they do, just get a good couple mid range phones in two different sizes out and call it a day and wait for this to all, you know, work itself out. But ultimately, they were saying in those early reports, like late this year, early next year, devices yeah. could possibly be ready. Like they're that far along in this. Inject into that conversation the fact that, and again, like you were saying earlier with processors, these manufacturers know this stuff way ahead of time. They get shared stuff, you know, secretly, you know, between them for months and months and months ahead of schedule before consumers ever hear anything yeah. about it. So ARM Holdings, who is the company that is responsible for building the architecture and moving the architecture forward for ARM-based chips that everyone uses. So Samsung builds them, MediaTek, we talked about, Rockchip, Qualcomm, Apple, all build ARM chips. So they're the architecture.
What does ARM stand for?
I have no
Surely
idea.
It's an right. abbreviation.
Oh, it is. I'd have to look it up.
We'll look Advanced up. Retro Micro Grade.
You just made that up.
You're right. You're absolutely right. I did.
What did you go with?
Advanced Retro Micro Grade.
I'm Googling
it. I have no idea.
Advanced Risk Machines.
Oh,
RISC.
What?
Oh, yeah. RIS. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. This is getting deeper than
that's
probably
the interface that you did. Yeah. That, yeah. Oh, wow. Okay.
So Risk is, yeah, whatever.
Oh, they're from England. That's interesting.
So ARM Holdings is, it's kind of like,
it's called Holdings, so yeah, it's
kind of like Linux in this fashion. Like it's like a consortium of people yeah. that do, you know, like they're building this thing for people to go use versus it, like it's not their tech. It's built for people to take in.
Right,
and
which
build.
Technically, like x86, which is most people think x86, they think Intel. X86 does not belong to Intel. No. AMD actually created x86, right. But x86 architecture is being used by some smaller chip companies in China that use it. It's right. not an Intel thing.
Right.
It is an architecture.
Right.
That's all it is.
And so that's the same thing with ARM. It's just a different style of architecture for making chipsets with cores that can do things. And obviously phones helped move those forward, and tablets have done so, and now we've moved into Chromebooks, and obviously now that same architecture will move into MacBooks, and eventually it's already in Chromebooks. Anything that has a MediaTek, so the Lenovo Duet, the Samsung Chromebook Plus,
Acer Tab 10.
There's quite a few Lenovos that have that MediaTek processor in them. We're going to see more laptops
the
with that.
The newer MediaTek ones. The old Samsung ones.
There's a bunch of ARM chips. Chrome OS is perfectly happy to run on ARM. And from what we can tell, even though Chrome OS itself feels a tad slower on some of these lower-end ARM chips, Android apps really love it because ultimately Android is written for phones. Phones all run on ARM. So developers spend a lot of time developing for that architecture, and then usually they'll make it work on x86 architecture, but it's not really written for that to take full advantage. PUBG is a perfect example of that. Anyway, all of that being said, if Google has been working on this already, ARM Holdings has come out and said, okay, so the name of their cores, is they call them Cortex. So Cortex A number. And that's the generation of core. So as they get it smaller and smush the processing size, so like five, they're moving into 5 nanometers now. I remember not too long ago, like the dream was getting to 10 nanometers, and so that's the process. Think of like brain synapses, the process width, how long, you know, that those electrodes have to move back and forth. And so the smaller those are, the less battery it takes, and it increases speed a little bit. Ultimately, it's about battery and efficiency, though. So ARM now has 5 nanometer. People are making 5 nanometer processes, which is crazy battery efficient, super fast. They can stay nice and cool. And so they just keep shrinking those processes down. Well, whatever that is, core, I don't know, it's a Cortex A78 or something, 77 maybe is where they're at. I don't know.
78.
They're constantly putting out, hey, here's our newest cores. But usually it's the same process we've talked about before. So they put those things out. Qualcomm or Apple or whatever take those and they put them in their thing, and then, you know, the same thing that happens with Intel chips happens with Qualcomm. Qualcomm owns the smartphone industry outside of Apple. Qualcomm says, here, Snapdragon 865, and soon, in a few months, they'll say, here's the 875. Here are the cores. Here's what those cores do, because we built it. We've got the technology and the resources to build these chips and make them at scale. This is what you have to work with. We told you about it 6 months, 12 months ago. You've been building your hardware to align with our hardware, and we make a thing. Well, ARM has now announced Cortex-X, which is, hey, here's our latest cores. And you can just kind of
drag and drop,
make your own, you know, and it's not that simple, obviously. But the whole point is companies that are smaller and don't have the resources that a Qualcomm or an Apple would, or Samsung. Samsung makes a lot of chips, too. Lots and lots of chips. Companies that don't have those types of resources, money, manpower, laboratories, all that kind of stuff. They can now much easier on a much smaller scale build their own custom silicon. And so they have it set up to where you can just customize. So you can build this chip to do whatever it is you think it needs to do. And so I saw that and immediately thought, this is a perfect fit for Google. Probably highly likely they're already doing this. Because I'm sure when ARM Holdings came out and said, hey, here's Cortex-X.
Yeah.
It wasn't like all the companies were like, oh my gosh, that sounds like something great I'd like to use. They've probably known about it for a year,
right?
That it was coming. They've been developing with it. And so it's highly likely that's something like what Google's using. So now they don't need to go find and build and create a team and poach a bunch of people, because I'm sure it's not like there's thousands of people sitting around that know how to build ARM chips.
Well,
like,
because the original rumors said that they were working with Samsung, which makes sense because, you know, obviously they've worked with Samsung on most of their major Chromebook releases. They've done ARM processor, ARM devices with them. But to be able to go to Samsung as a Google partner and say, hey, we want to leverage this Cortex-X, let's work together and make this happen.
We'll develop what we want in the core.
Yeah, because Samsung's not pushing X and O's to Chromebooks. They don't care about that. That's their, what do they use them for? Mid-range phones, stuff like that?
They use them on their high-end stuff phones. Too, but it's overseas.
Yeah.
So over here, Qualcomm owns that market.
But they've also helped Apple with their chips too. So,
And there's rumors that possibly the next A-series chip from Apple will be manufactured by Samsung. I mean, like, Samsung has massive scope and scale. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that anyone would use them to build a thing, but they may not work with Samsung to design that thing. It's just like, hey, we need that lab that you have that builds those things and makes them. We need access to that. And so, you know, Cortex X would give Google the ability to create the processor they want and then be able to go to Samsung and say, hey, here's what we're going to do. Can you build this? And they could do a few chips, you know, one that's specifically for Chromebooks and one that's specifically for phones. But when you start talking about that vertical integration that you get from building your own chipset now, you start to understand why Google might not be rushing to put together a phone with the latest Snapdragon processor and rushing to put together a Chromebook with an Intel chip inside when they know, hey, we've built, I mean, ARM has come far enough. Obviously, if Apple's willing to stick their neck out and put it in a MacBook, it's possible.
Yeah.
Like what the stuff that Apple has access to is the same stuff everyone else has access to.
And that's
to.
Probably where Google's stuck right now, because in all honesty, if these rumors are very accurate and Google has this on the roadmap in the next 18 months, say, regardless of what monetary loss might be involved, either the 4A or the 5 need to go to the chopping block. There's no sense in releasing both of these phones in the next 18 months if this is where their roadmap is headed.
And I guarantee it is. I mean, when you start thinking about that vertical integration again, A, money helps, so they can bring prices down if they choose to. But ultimately, it's going to give them the ability to compete in a completely different way. And it's the way that Apple does it. So Google can't release something to actually compete with the iPhone SE at this point. Like that's probably the perfect case to look at this and be like, okay, you can see the difference here. Apple's like, hey, this is our chip. We can do what we want with it. And so they plopped it in a much older hardware set, basically. And the SE is the iPhone, 6, I think, or something like that. So it's old hardware, huge bezels, a decent screen or whatever. But they, you know, kind of put together, piecemeal their stuff together. But then they're like, but we're also going to put our latest chip in here. So the phone is crazy fast. As long as you don't smash it under a car, it's going to last you for 5 years because we'll update that thing. That's another part of this.
That's a whole different conversation
right there. They can keep their phones updated because Qualcomm doesn't keep up with their chips for more than a couple years. Intel, I don't know what Intel's, I guess they work with them in some way for Chromebooks, but ultimately, I'm sure they're always fighting these chip manufacturers to make sure that, hey, we want to do 8 to 10 years of updates on these things. Well, are we sure Intel's going to keep up their end? Are we sure that Qualcomm's going to keep up their end? What is MediaTek going to keep updating their stuff? Or what's it going to look like 7 years from now?
None of that matters.
Doesn't matter if it's your own silicon. And I don't think it'll just be on one Chromebook. It's not like, oh, our Pixelbook has our own. It's like, hey, this has this. And by the way, everybody else, if you'd like to use our silicon, here, take it. And make your own hardware and stop worrying so much about what the chipset's going to do inside of it. I think it's just going to change so many things in the course of the next 2 to 3 years. And I think companies in general are just going to start moving in this direction of it's so much more beneficial to control hardware from the ground up versus being kind of halfway.
Everyone's like, dang it, Apple. Apple nailed this. I guess we need to go do that.
And that's
now.
The thing. Google's in prime position, it just globally to make this move. Is it going to be a big hit for them off the bat? No, but they are in a position to say, hey, we're going to make this move, and 2, 3, 4 years from now, it's going to benefit us as a company, but it's going to benefit our brand. It's going to benefit our consumers because we'll be back in that cycle of premium Pixel phones with, you know, glamorous hardware releases that have the best of the best. You've got their camera technology, you've got all of this, and you have a price that people are going, man, that's a good price. If they want to.
And you don't have to be stuck with the idea that if you buy an Android phone, it's good for 2 years.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, because they can say, every other Android phone is. Ours isn't.
Right.
Like our phone, if you buy our phone, you can keep it for 4 years if you want to. And we're going to keep updates on it because, again, we control it from the ground up. And the same thing's true, I think, with, it's less true of Chromebooks. I think it just becomes a differentiator there, that if they had that control over the silicon, think about what that gives them the ability to do from, like you were saying earlier, from, you know, their hardware manufacturing partners, where there's all of these different chipsets and all these different makers and stuff, and we start seeing more people adopt a more standardized chipset inside, you know, Google could offer a couple different tiers of their own chip, you know, and you don't have to do this, but if you want to save yourself a crap ton of work, why wouldn't you just do that? Why wouldn't you move to a chipset that is power efficient, is powerful, and I'm not going to have to rewrite everything I did to make my Chromebook work. I can just use that chipset and I'm really focus on making a better screen or manufacturing better. A better hinge or, you know, making sure that the camera works, you know, whatever.
Just making sure all the seams line up.
Yeah. You know, simple stuff.
Ouch.
you know, so I think it's not something we're going to see next week. No. It's not something we're going to see at the end of this month, but I think 2021, aside from the world coming to an end.
But it does explain maybe some of the weirdness right now. Like, I mean, obviously there's a pandemic.
Sure.
That's obviously adding to all of this. But
Apple's making announcements. Yeah. Apple's launching stuff.
Yeah.
Samsung's launching stuff. OnePlus. Yeah. They're not a massive company. Still launching stuff. So the pandemic excuse is like,
it's not.
I get things being a little wonky. But
And they've said, well, you know, the market just isn't right now. I'm like, oh, come on.
No, they're just not sure what they're doing. Yeah. And I think they've got their eyes on something down the road.
I don't know that I'd really thought about this until we had this conversation right now. I mean, I guess I had considered it.
I thought about it a lot.
Yeah, I guess I've considered it, I hadn't realized that maybe that's some of the explanation of why things are so weird right now. No, that makes sense.
I would almost guarantee it.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's almost like they're just kind of coming to their own and figuring out, like,
When it's like we need to figure this stuff out, don't we? And there's some other moving pieces, and you're just like, what do we need to do with this? Like this.
Yeah, and it just sucks because right now the consumers are the ones left holding the bag because we have these expectations on Google, and now they're over going, man, guys, we've got it. We have to change course, but some people are going to get left behind in that process.
Yeah. Just go buy a OnePlus.
I don't know.
phone at least.
Yeah, or three.
I don't know how. I don't know how Google's supposed to deal with this. Most companies just would keep tight lip and keep moving forward. But man, it would be really cool to see. Like, they've been overly transparent here lately.
Yeah,
there's been a couple things leak, like the whole G Suite thing.
They just,
you know, it leaked out, and they just went ahead and just announced it because it's not supposed to be announced till next week. The whole integrated Gmail workspace thing, which maybe we'll talk a little more about that next week. But you know, and there's something. What else leaked?
The Nest,
and they just said,
yeah.
The Nest. They went ahead and put out the video,
a teaser video, and then didn't launch
it. Looks so cool. That thing looks great, and it's basically that kind of what we had talked about kind of looking like the Nest router, like, stuff, you know.
And Wi-Fi.
Gosh,
it's gonna be cool. But it seems like they've just kind of taken some of this stuff and gone like, people are talking about it already. Let's just go ahead and say what we need to say. Yeah. It'd be really refreshing to see them come out and say, "Hey, look,
we're making these chips. Here's what we're doing.
We're building custom silicon. You've heard what Apple's doing. We're making a similar move, and because of it, you know, there's some things we got to think through and do. And one of them is we're not launching a flagship phone this year because ultimately. It's ridiculous what Qualcomm is charging for, and that was the reason I wrote the article last week.
Yep.
Is that they're saying that the next Qualcomm chip right now, it costs manufacturers about $150 to $160 for the 865. They're saying the 875 is going to go up another $100. So you're talking $250 for the manufacturer buying them at scale,
which is crazy because you can buy like a 10th gen, 11th gen i7 processor for $200.
It's crazy. And so, like, the only response to this is going to be for most people to figure out a different answer for silicon, which is so bizarre to me from Qualcomm's perspective, because, like, you're forcing people to make different decisions, guys. Yep. Like, you're pushing people away from your product, but they're also, Qualcomm's smart enough to really start working on the 700 line, so that's what's probably going to be in
they maybe have a roadmap, and maybe it's not super lucrative for them to keep doing this. That's why they're charging so much.
Could be,
you know, and maybe they're just like,
mid-range,
whatever.
The,
like,
mid-range is where their money is.
Yeah, people go make your stuff. We're going to work on these other chips.
They make a lot of other stuff other than phone chips too. Yeah. They make modems. I guarantee you 90%, 80% of the IoT in your house.
Yeah. It's just crazy. They have so much brand equity with Snapdragon.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone knows Snapdragon. Well, not everyone. A lot of people.
Most people.
You know, techie people know Snapdragon. And I don't know. Maybe that. Yeah, maybe it's in their roadmap to just focus on these mid-range chips, and that's where they can make lucrative. Yeah, they can make more money that way, and it's probably less headache. And
for most users, they're not going to notice. I mean, yeah. People that don't play 3D games on their phone.
The OnePlus.
Nord.
What was that document? Are they calling that documentary anything? Was
it just New Beginnings?
The New Beginnings.
New Beginnings. Yeah. So
it'll end. Like the fourth one, I guess, will be the announcement.
Yeah,
but that's how they're announcing.
They talked about like how good chips are getting.
Yeah,
you know, and that's why they decided to put in the lower end chip, because they're like, it's good for 90% of what you're needing.
What you had mentioned earlier, though, with updates, if Qualcomm does shift their focus to mid range, they're going to have to reconsider how they deal with updates, because your people, not all the time, but generally speaking, people that are buying mid-range phones, the more affordable phones, they're not looking to upgrade. It's us. We're the people that buy a new phone every six months, every 3 months. It's Apple users that get a new iPhone because it's a new iPhone. They don't care what it costs. These mid-range phone buyers, they want something that lasts 3 and 4 years.
Yeah, my dad bought a, you know, Samsung A whatever, you know, cheap phone, and he's had it for 3 years.
Yeah,
you
as
know
long as it runs, he's not going to get a new one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, we'll see. It would be nice to hear something from Google about this.
It would be.
That would be really nice.
It'd be refreshing.
If anyone's listening, John, if you're listening, go tap on somebody's shoulder and tell them.
Just let the beans out. You know, tell people what's going on. So
because right now it just feels so weird.
It is.
Weird.
Can you imagine a future in a couple of years where you're not talking about the latest Snapdragon whatever in the Pixel phone? It's just here's the new G7 processor from Google, you know. And
can we call it Bionic?
Andromeda.
Yes, I haven't talked about that in a while.
But I mean, they could range their chips from their Chromebooks to their phones. They could build their silicon for all of their Nest stuff.
Yep.
They could control all of that stuff and really be able to, because like that's where I think Google's always a little more ambitious than most, and from the software end of things, like they like trying new things and building stuff that does crazy stuff. Well, imagine what that's going to be like if it's just untethered from, oh well, that we don't have a chip with, like, we can't get that core and that Snapdragon to do its XYZ. So maybe next time it comes around, we'll be able to do that. Like, if they just have the ability to just say, hey, look, we want to do this. Make a core that does this and that chip, and we could see some crazy stuff from them. So it's exciting.
So we're gonna wrap this thing up, but I do want to quickly mention the Gmail stuff, and we'll maybe talk about it more next week. But go check out Robbie's article about what talk about, like, coming into your own and like figuring out, like, maybe we just need to put all this together. Maybe we can just make our own silicone. Like, they have all these different productivity apps, and somebody, like you said, I guess they brought in somebody else to kind of help with this.
I can't remember his name, but they did bring in a guy to clean it up, basically.
They were like, hey, everyone's in Gmail. Let's just put all our stuff in there.
And I love
and it looks so great.
They did like a 2.5-minute video that goes with this, you know, unannounced announcement kind of thing. And when you look at it, like, it's the whole thing set up with, you know, people chatting technically back and forth, and so little chat bubbles. And, you know, right at the beginning, someone says, you know, I start my day in email, and the person says, I do too. And the next person says, doesn't everyone? You know, like, realizing that is so key. Like, to not say, hey, emails, I know you have all these things, but go start using this other tool, and then we'll find a way to integrate email into it somehow or something. Like, Basecamp.
It was the issue we always had with the marketing firm we worked with.
Yeah.
It was always, we're so tied to email, and our clients are tied to email.
Right.
That there was just no, I mean, you have all these different integrations and all this stuff. Well, guess what? Google has Gmail.
Right.
You know?
And it's one of their biggest platforms.
And now they have these awesome other tools that they've built that have kind of been siloed, you know, chat and meet and, I mean, rooms and all the, and now Docs, it's all, yeah, and now it's all just kind of coming together in Gmail. And it's really going to be, I think it's going to be a big shift for For Gmail users, for is it just G Suite?
G Suite, yeah.
Okay.
G Suite, yeah. And at first, I was like, "Oh man!" But then I'm like,
"No,
it
makes
as
sense."
A personal thing, I don't know why I would
I wouldn't want
to
have all that productivity stuff.
Because I don't,
and they probably need to make a little money on it to justify all this.
And it just doesn't. I don't know that it makes sense on a personal level.
Not really.
Like, I mean, why do you?
If
need
I'm going to use it as a team for work, I probably need to be.
I mean, if you even if you're in a small business that just has a few employees, if you get to the point where you need to leverage that daily for your workflow, you're probably ready to invest in a G Suite.
Right.
Yeah, I think there's still $5 per user. Is that what it is?
Yeah. I mean, so we're not talking about like a bunch of money. It's just.
Yeah.
You know, a straightforward kind of business expense that you need to take. And again, if I'm by myself, like I don't.
Yeah, you don't need it.
Why do I need all this integration to work and chat with my team? But man, to be able to jump in and out of chats, like edit documents right in Gmail. Like to jump
not
in
to
meetings.
Click over to something else.
To move from seamlessly from an email to a chat because there's so many times.
In the same thread.
Right. Where an email is like, cool, I don't want to go back and forth with you sentence after sentence in an email. Let's move this to a chat. That's just not been simple. So if that simplifies, and then hey, we can hop on a call, and then oh, my calendar's integrated here, and oh, we can you know communicate right now in this chat right next to the document that we're editing, and never leave that tab.
And that's bonkers. The other thing. Like the calendar integration is so cool to me because, in the video they show, you know, you're hopping in a chat real quick to I need to send Gabe a message, but because we're using this, you know, Google chat stuff, it sees that Gabe's in a meeting. So it says, oh, Gabe's in a meeting. It gives me a little thing at the bottom whenever I go to message him. So if he doesn't respond right now, it's because he's in his meeting or whatever. It's like so many things that just make so much sense. It's so awesome to finally see it come all together. And it's like,
and not be another tool and not be another, oh, go get this app.
Yeah. Nope. Download this other thing
on your
phone.
You're already here. Yep. We're just making Gmail crazy awesome. Yep. We're really going to go all in.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean,
I'm excited.
We've already started using chat for with our intern, and it's a perfect solution for that.
Right.
We use Meet
just be
all
better.
The time. We use Calendar all the time. I mean, so it's like it's going to make perfect sense for us. It might be a little bit of a shift. I mean, we use WhatsApp for our just kind of ongoing threads of chat.
Yeah.
You know,
so that will be the main shift for
it'll,
us. I think,
but I think it could be really useful to segment some of the conversations that we're sometimes having in one big huge thread.
Right.
You know,
especially have rooms around those.
Exactly. You know, if it's a development thing, it's in the development rooms. So that way we know, like, and then I'm trying to go back and find something that we said and I'm trying to search the right thing. I mean, I do it all the time. Yeah. So to be able to segment some of those and then just mentally to separate things a little bit. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, I mean, everyone knows chat threads can go crazy. And,
right.
You know, I look down at my phone and I'm working at home and you guys have 70 messages that I got to read through and figure out what's going on. You know, so sort of segment some of that could help.
Yeah.
I ignore, like, if I have a day where I have, because I usually try to check and stay in there. If I have a day and it's one of those days where there's like 75 unread messages, I just don't go back and look. And then, like, if I come in and Robbie's like, oh, did you see my message?
Nope.
And I'm like,
nope.
No, you didn't say anything. And then he goes and takes a screenshot and makes me feel, I'm like, oh, my
bad. No, I just straight up say I didn't read it.
Joe don't care.
These guys are messaging back and forth.
I was in my yard working, and I did not care.
these guys are messaging back and forth in our Gaming Unboxed thread, you know, because Michael Perrigo, who is, you know, remote in Florida, you know, we have to communicate with him more on chat. And so, there's some days there's so many messages in there. I'm just like, okay, whatever. So, all right. Anywho, our Jimmy Johns is here.
It is. Sorry. I was confused because I've got my phone on silent, so I was completely disconnected. Apparently, one of our coworkers put the Jimmy John's in the fridge for us.
There we go.
I looked at the order tracker and it said eat, and I'm like,
what?
Where? I can't eat it. It's not here.
I just ate your sandwich.
Yeah.
So why did they get up the stairs on their own?
I guess.
Wow.
Holy
there.
Cow, we have moved into
Freaky
a new dimension.
Fast Friday is a success.
We might bring them back as a sponsor for the
party. That's right. They're back. All right, folks. Thanks so much for tuning in. As always, we're going to link some stuff. We've got some cool. Let's link these videos and stuff that Google's put out.
Yep.
Let's link out the Mr. Who's the Boss. Mr. Who's the Boss, Mr. Beast. So we'll link all that stuff and go check out last week's episode. Again, I mean, if you haven't listened to that one, definitely go check it out. I do want to mention also, send us some questions. If you have questions for us, go on Twitter, use the hashtag #TheChromeCast. We're going to do another episode that's just answering questions here soon. I don't know when, but here soon. So send us some questions if you have those. We'll try to get those answered live on the podcast. Alrighty, I think that's it. So thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you guys next week. See ya. Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. You can find show notes over at chromeunbox.com/podcast. And if you want to stay up to date with everything that's happening in the world of Chrome and Chrome OS, make sure to check out our website, chromeunbox.com, and follow us on social media by searching for @ChromeUnboxed. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.